This is Pavlina Demchuk-Macquarie, producer and host of Nash Holos Ukrainian Roots Radio. Welcome, Vitayu. I hope you'll enjoy this next podcast of a feature interview recently broadcast on the show. Links to all Nash Holos podcasts and a live broadcast, as well as program details at www.nashholos.com. We have Mirko Petriu on the line now. Mirko is president of the Vancouver branch of the Ukrainian-Canadian Congress, following the events in Ukraine very closely. Mirko, welcome. Vitayu.
Yes, hello.
Give us an update on what's going on in Crimea right now. How do you see what's playing out?
Well, in Crimea, we're seeing a full-blown invasion. At last count, we've got somewhere close to 30,000 Russian troops. What is very interesting about that is they are in the very latest Russian military gear, uniforms, helmets, and so on. But all insignia and identifying patches have been removed or aren't on them at all. So I guess by international law that counts as some form of piracy because they're not identifiable troops. Anyways, they've controlled all of Crimea. They have very recently laid a minefield actually across the Crimean border in the Ukrainian province of Khersonshchina. They're laying a minefield there, and I believe there's some international laws about minefields too. So they're in breach of all kinds of laws and agreements and treaties.
Yeah, but Mirko, if they're in breach of these laws, can anybody hold them accountable? And they're a rogue state; they're as bad as North Korea.
Well, I recently read a very interesting statement regarding the Budapest Memorandum. The Budapest Memorandum was an agreement between the United States, the United Kingdom, Ukraine, and Russia that in exchange for Ukraine getting rid of its nuclear arsenal, which at that time was actually the third largest in the world,
right,
for getting rid of that arsenal, its territorial integrity and a few other things would be guaranteed. Well, we now see what that guarantee means. And in fact, the comment was that yes, that memorandum is legally binding, but it's unenforceable.
Yeah.
I mean, it doesn't say if the U.S. doesn't do X, it loses Texas. You know, I mean, there's no penalty. Okay, there's no penalty. Yes, it's legally binding. There's no way to enforce it. And the same thing applies to what we're talking about here about, laying minefields in a neighboring country, actually, in this case here, or in Khersonshchina, which is just north of the border of Crimea.
Yeah, well, we see it as a neighboring country, but Putin doesn't.
Well, and I think actually in Putin's mind, he's after more than just Crimea. I think he wants to occupy all of Ukraine, or at least all of eastern Ukraine, including the capital, Kyiv. He probably would not be very interested in Khersonshchina, although who knows. But it's he's not going to stop until somebody stops him. So he's going to see how far he can get. A few interesting things to note. If you listen to the English press journalists and what have you, they keep reminding us of the 1954 gift by Khrushchev of Crimea to Ukraine. At that time, Crimea was absolutely destroyed by the war, so it was a ruin and a desert. Okay, what it needed, and the reason that it had to be joined up to Ukraine is one, water; two, electricity. Even today, Crimea gets all of its electricity from Ukraine. So with the flip of the switch, we can, Ukraine would knock Crimea back to, 19th century, right? The water is used for irrigation. As I mentioned, Crimea is a desert. So all of the agriculture there depends on water coming down a canal from the Dnipro River in Ukraine. So it is totally economically dependent on Ukraine. Another interesting statistic that I just found is the majority of the people in Crimea are pensioners. I mean, it may actually be financially beneficial to give that that pension obligation to Putin. Crimea does not have much of an economy other than tourism. And of course, tourism has just been destroyed. So what's happening there is not even very good from an economical standpoint, you know, everything else aside.
Those are trump cards, the electricity and the water. But,
yes, they
but
have, I mean, I think the trade-off there, of course, you know, Russia has a trump card in shutting off a gas supply to Ukraine, although that isn't as big a threat in the summertime as it would be in the winter.
But, Mirko, what strikes me here is that Putin has come in. He doesn't care about the people. Ukraine could do that, but they're not, because people depend on the electricity. If the people would be hurt.
Ukraine is still treating Crimea as one of its provinces, so it's not going to do anything to harm its citizens, and it's still acting that way. Like I said, it does have a few cards up its sleeve here, to say the least. Without Ukrainian water, without Ukrainian electricity, Crimea cannot support its current population.
So, does Putin care?
Putin doesn't care, of course. I think he is motivated by restoration of empire. One thing we have to remember, and again, we don't hear that in the Anglophone press, Russia or the Russian Federation is not a nation state in any European sense of the word, like, you know, France, Germany, Italy, Spain, what have you. It is an empire. It's an empire for empire's sake. If we look at it historically, it is actually a continuation of the empire that Genghis Khan started back in the 13th century. I mean, it went through umpteen permutations, including, you know, the USSR, and then back to the Russian Federation. Prior to that, it was the Russian Empire, et cetera. You know, so there was a series of name changes. Actually, the name Muscovy, or the Muscovian Tsardom, was probably the longest lasting name for that empire. But it is in fact, after a series of regime changes, a continuation of that, which so it's not a third Rome by any means, and it does not deserve the name Russia, which is a derivative of Rus, which was the name of the country around Kiev. It was the name of Ukraine at one time.
Now, we're not talking about the rank and file Russian people who, you know, work farms and similar to.
Average Russian, I don't think he cares, but we're looking at the political elite, and the political elite is very much in control. And I'm just reminding you that it's more than one man, it's more than Putin. Of course, he's got his clone in Medvedev, but, whether it's him or Medvedev or Zhirinovsky or any one of those characters, they're gonna pursue exactly the same line of politics here.
And these are basically they're mafia. We call them mafia, but
they're motivated by something a little bit more than dollars and cents. And I think it's probably a mistake on a part of the West thinking that oh my gosh, if we freeze their accounts, they're gonna come begging to us. I think they're motivated by this imperial ambition, much more than personal finances. I think they're all quite well off, the political elite. So they're really not too worried about the personal finances. I think they're after the glory of rebuilding an empire.
That just put a chill.
And that's harder to fight.
Yeah, and that just put a chill down my spine. It is harder to fight. Do you think? Is it? I mean, what can be done?
The question is, what can be done? I mean, all kinds of things can be done. I mean, right now, it would be very interesting if, for example, the U.S. ships, and the U.S. does have a couple of military ships in the Black Sea and a whole lot close by, if they were to hold a joint military exercise with the Ukrainian military, which right now is basically trapped in various ports in Crimea. There's an inlet called Danuzlau that's been blocked by the Russians when they sunk a couple of their own ships, their own older ships. They sunk them to block the entrance to the inlet. So, there's strange things happening there.
Oh, wow. Well, I guess all we can do right now is keep an eye on things and report what's happening, try to keep ahead of the Russian propaganda, which unfortunately seems to be making a bit of a foothold in the West.
Exactly. One of the other things that really worries me is there's almost a plan of a genocide of the Crimean Tartars.
Oh no, not again.
They have been very much pro-Ukrainian.
Right.
And, you know, they had suffered terribly at the hands of the Russians, and they certainly don't want to see Russian control over Crimea. Just recently, there's been the arrival of some paramilitaries from Serbia.
Yeah.
And these are the characters that participated in the genocide in Kosovo that some of us recall quite recently. Very much anti-Muslim, and of course the Crimean Tatars are Muslim, so there's going to be a bit of an anti-Muslim pogrom, if you wish, or ethnic cleansing, or even a genocide.
Lovely.
That would happen once Russia takes formal control over Crimea.
Well, let's hope that doesn't happen. Somehow there's a miracle.
Right.
Yeah. Thanks so much, Mirko. I know you've got things to do, and this is being recorded Sunday morning, and you're off to the Shevchenko concert. So thanks so much, Mirko.
Thank you very much.
I hope you enjoyed this week's feature interview from Nash Holos Ukrainian Roots Radio. In addition to interviews such as the one you just heard, Nash Holos is host to many other outstanding features produced by people who love to share their love of Ukrainian culture with non-Ukrainian speakers. From Ukrainian recipes and cooking tips to reviews of English language books on Ukrainian themes, views on Ukrainian politics and current affairs, culture, folklore, and of course great Ukrainian music, traditional and contemporary, by artists from Ukraine, Canada, and around the world. So join me, Pavlina, and my fascinating guests on the weekly radio broadcasts in Vancouver and Nanaimo. You can listen to the live broadcasts on air or online, or download the podcast and listen later in your own good time. You'll find program information, broadcast details, and podcast links at www.nashholos.com. So until next time, dopobachenya.